That's what
I can adjourn.
The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. Welcome, everyone, and we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 973. We have two senators here. And a president. President, would you like to come forward? Senator? Mr. President.
He's going first.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the August Committee. My name is Senator Jason Atkinson. I represent a fair portion of Southern Oregon. The Senate President has told me that I was going to go first on this bill, but you need to know the history of this bill in order for it to, I think, show the weight of it. Senate President and I were involved in the initial part of this bill back in 2003. And before it became a bill, it was a constituent of mine who played varsity basketball, varsity baseball, and was a runner. He was a great athlete. And he had a senior project, and the senior project was how to change a wrong and make it a right by way of a piece of legislation. And Mr. Aaron Matthews at the time was 17 years old. He could not drive because the DMV under Oregon guidelines said that he was legally blind, even though he played varsity basketball. And so he had me come to his senior project and sit in front of the class. And actually, it was in front of his senior class, all of them, and have him grill me so that he could get an easy A. So as we were walking out to the parking lot, I said, "Well, Mr. Matthews, I've just guaranteed that you've got an A on your senior project. If you really want to change this, show up next year and we'll run the bill." And so he did. And at the time, he went from changing from Grants Pass High School to Chemeketa Community College. And the reason he chose Chemeketa Community College is it had a public transportation system that would allow him to get started. And it was also affordable. And so he showed up on the given day, and we wrote this bill that would say that the use of bioptic lenses under very serious conditions and speed limit restrictions and daylight restrictions and different vision requirements could be used in order for someone like Aaron Matthews to attain driving privileges. That bill very similarly mirrored what could happen in the state of California, state of Washington, state of Idaho. So as you can imagine, 17, 18 years old, you can't have a driver's license. It was a very big issue for Mr. Aaron Matthews. And quite honestly, I put my heart into it. Now, usually when I put my heart into things, I get in trouble. And in steps, Senate President Peter Courtney. President Courtney was very familiar with an Olympic runner who had run in the Olympics named Marla Runyon, who was able to drive when she lived in California, but when she had moved to Eugene, could not, who suffered from the same issue. And so back in 2003, the two of us got together and we wrote this bill. Now, the bill was very simple. As I told you, it had all the restrictions on it, but what was unique about it was all of the snickering behind the dais as we did this bill, because the snickering was, there goes Atkinson and Courtney again letting blind people drive. And it was the snickering that nearly killed the bill. Now, the other thing that was so fascinating about it is Mr. Aaron Matthews shows up, he's never had a necktie, he's never had a sports coat, but his mother went and got him his first necktie and his first sport coat, and he nervously read out 3x5 cards, and he sat there and he read them all. He read them all to the committee, all of his testimony. And if we didn't suffer some difficulties, in fact, I think our bill was almost up for the turkey bill of the year award, and nobody thought it would work. DMV, Department of Transportation, was against it, and And as you might suggest, whenever you're going to change the law, there was weeping and gnashing of teeth. But we prevailed and we got it out of the Senate, basically bending every favor we had, and senators were more courteous to us than they were used to. In fact, that bill probably cost us quite a bit of time and energy on other related measures in which we were given courtesy votes. It went on the Senate floor. The snickering was at a low hum, and yet we passed it. So we have succeeded, Mr. President, we thought. We came over to the House. We faced, I believe, this committee or a committee very similar to it. We faced the exact same thing. Mr. Aaron Matthews came up. He was reading his thing. He had his new suit on, one with the brass buckles from JCPenney, a clip-on tie, looked sharp. His mom was in the back, proud as could ever be. And the bill came out of committee, and the bill went to the Senate floor. Now here, or the House floor. Now here's where things got interesting. See, I have rented the same house in Salem for over a decade, and I'm sitting on the back patio of the house where I rent, and I'm playing around with my dog, you know, a nice summer day, and I get a very hostile phone call from my good friend, Senate President Peter Courtney, who has said, "What have I done to have all the Republicans vote no on this bill?" And he's very upset. Come to find out, all the Democrats saw my name on it and all voted no. So this bill, Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, failed on the House floor unanimous. It was a unanimous killing of our bill. Democrats didn't like it for me for some reason, and Republicans didn't like it for him for obvious reasons, but nonetheless, the bill failed. And a freshman legislator, then one Representative Beyer, stood up and changed her vote and served notice of possible reconsideration, which gave us a 24-hour start. And long story short, the bill passed. The bill was signed into law. The bill has been amended, I believe, 4 years after that. It has gone and been succeeded all the way through, and this bill before you simply allows it to continue by changing the sunset. Now, whatever happened to the kid? This is the great story. The kid's able to drive. The kid changes, goes through the course set up by DMV and everything, changes to go to this little school down in Eugene called University of Oregon, where he earns a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, makes the mistake that all of us make at one point in our life, sometimes often, and he falls in love. And then he marries his love, and they produce a child. And he is now a high school teacher in Josephine County, successful as he always was. And he changed the world, and he's even got a tie-on tie and a different sport coat. But, Mr. Chairman, that's the story, and I'm sticking to it.
Excellent story. Mr. President.
Thank you. Chair Vance, Chair Reed, I know he's not here, members of the House Transportation and Economic Development Committee. My name is Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator in District 11, which includes major portions of Salem and Jervis and Woodburn. I'm here today to ask the committee for support for 973. I do thank you very much for allowing me to come here today and to testify and to also be willing to at least at this stage hold a public hearing on Senate Bill 973. The good Senator Jason Atkinson has outlined the history of this saga, which began in 2003, where we attempted to give daytime licenses to individuals that had a certain kind of disease that impaired their vision. And at that time, it had to be sunsetted to survive, to get out of legislature. And after 2007, we removed the sunset on daytime driving for these individuals because the record was in. At that time, the Department of Transportation actually favored the bill. They attempted to stop the bill initially in the Senate side. We finally got them to neutral, but they really did not ever like the bill at that time. That was a factor all the way along. Of course, the good senator explained how it nearly didn't happen. I think it passed by two votes in the House, so it would never have gotten off the ground. But we also, in 2007, when we took off this daytime sunset for these individuals, we added a nighttime driving, which was another heavy lift. People saying, you know, what in the devil are you doing? And today, what it's all about is to remove the nighttime sunset. And the record is in. Of the 31 individuals who are currently in the program, at one point, their crash rate is 1.8% for people in the program compared to 2.5% annual crash rate for the general public. and none of the individuals eligible for nighttime driving have been involved in a crash. There are about 31 people who have bioptic lenses driving and 14 people in the nighttime program. And so their accident rate does not exist for the nighttime rate, because there isn't any accident rate. They haven't had any accidents. In the daytime, it is well below the average that has been experienced in Oregon. You should also know there's very strict guidelines, and I'm not going to litany all of them for you, but I do know they cannot drive on any road. It's more than 45 miles per hour. They have to go through a special testing every 2 years, and it goes on and on, which involves a medical person as well as our Department of Transportation. So it's rigidly monitored. It has been a very successful program. The Marla Runyon was the great Olympic runner who did come here and testify, and even how she would run her races was remarkable, let alone talk about this bill. So we're back. It came out of the House Senate Committee unanimously. It came up the Senate floor unanimously. And all we're here today to do is ask for your support and your individual collective wisdom to remove the sunset for the nighttime program. So that the program, which began so many years ago, with the remarkable testimony of Aaron Matthews and Marla Runyon, finally, after all these years, and this is the way it should have been handled, I suppose, becomes to a remarkable success that this program, which through trial and error has demonstrated it will work, it is safe, and it does a remarkable amount of good for not a lot of people, but is so much an Oregon story, because Oregon is not about a whole group. She's about the individuals. She's a group of individuals who often struggle every day to get by. These individuals have led, Marla Runyon, Aaron Matthews, remarkable lives, as are the other individuals involved in the program. So thank you again, Chair Bence, members of the House Committee on Transportation and Development, for allowing us to be even heard today and for considering this bill on its merits. I stand for any questions, comments, or criticisms.
Thank you, Mr. President. Are there questions for this panel, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't recall seeing or hearing you state it, and I've tried to look briefly at the bill. What is the current sunset?
It's June 30th of this year. At the end of June of this year, the nighttime program will sunset unless this sunset will stop unless this bill is successful. The nighttime part of the bill.
Follow up, please.
Yes, follow up.
And are we going to hear from ODOT? And if not, have you?
The Chair Bence, Representative Lindsay, yes, they are in the room as they were in the room in the Senate, and they will testify of statistics as well as their review of this piece of legislation.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And yes, do we have someone from ODOT here that we could ask a few questions of? Who? Yes. Come on up. You rejoice. Yes. And probably we could have Mr. Kreitz come up also.
Chair Bence, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. I've handed out some brief written testimony, but to sort of sum that up and confirm what President Courtney and Senator Atkinson spoke about, the history on the bill since 2003, the one correction I would make is the reference to the restriction to folks remaining on roads and highways that are posted 45 miles per hour or less. In 2007, when the sunset on the bioptic program itself was lifted and the pilot for the nighttime driving was added, that 45 mile per hour restriction also was lifted. So today the restriction on folks is that they, once they get the license, which is an extensive process to do that involving quite a bit of training and testing, they need to be wearing the bioptic lens and they are to drive only during the day unless they take the additional training, do the additional testing under the pilot to be able to drive at night. And President Courtney was accurate in his recitation of the statistics. 31 folks are currently in the low vision driver program, 14 of those eligible to drive at night. And of all the licensed low vision drivers, 3 individuals have had a total of 4 crashes reported to DMV since the pilot began in 2004. That is a 1.8% annualized crash rate. None of those individuals were crashed as part of the nighttime eligibility. And for comparison, 2.5% of all licensed drivers in Oregon are involved in a crash reported to DMV every year. That's what I have.
Thank you. And why don't we ask Mr. Kreis to add what he has, and then we'll go to questions.
Yeah. Chair Vance, members of the committee, my name is Don Kreitz, Oregon Driver Education Center. I was the first person actually certified to train in the bioptics program and actually trained Mr. Matthews and Marla Runyon. Also trained an individual in Eugene by the name of Midge Phillips, who asked me to read a statement on her behalf. Hello, my name is Midge Phillips, and I have been a bioptic driver since September 30th, 2008. Bioptic driving during the day as well as night has not just changed my life, but my family's as well. I am a wife and a mother of two small boys, age 11 and 8. My boys play sports and attend school functions, which require me to drive them to and from the event. If I were unable to drive at night, then my family would not be able to do the fun things that other kids get to do. My husband is the sole provider of our household and works out of town often in very long hours. If he is unavailable, then I need to be able to take my kids to the emergency room in the middle of the night or go to the store and get them medicine that they may need. I also use the nighttime license to visit friends for social benefit for myself or even go and help a friend on a moment's notice. I am a good, responsible bioptic driver who has done her extended driver training and uses this program to benefit myself and my family. I'm a great driver during the day as well as at night. I please urge you to keep this program to allow people with low vision the opportunity to be more independent. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? I have a couple. So the insurance issues on folks like this, are there any? Once the department certifies them to drive, then they don't have any difficulty obtaining insurance, as far as you guys know?
Chair Benz, I'm not aware of any.
I have not heard of any either.
And as far as your training of folks that are visually challenged, what do you do? How do you, do they have to meet a certain minimum standard of vision to qualify for your program? And then from that point, what's different about your training?
Sure. Chair Benz, members of the committee. Depending upon prior driving experience will dictate the number of hours that are required. So in the case, for example, of Marla Runyon, who had previously been licensed, she was required to take 21 hours of training in order to be relicensed, and that was only after her low vision specialist certified that she met the criteria that the state has set forth for low vision drivers. And so at the completion of the 21 hours, I must certify that she is a safe driver, and then in addition she has to go to the DMV and retest in an actual drive behind the wheel test. The nighttime driving, the students are required to take an additional 2 hours minimum of training in a variety of driving circumstances, and so I'm required to take them out on the road at night and drive in the city, in the country, the freeway, residential areas to determine that they are driving safely under those conditions.
And I guess no set of questions would be complete if we didn't ask about the cost of the program. Is this an additional cost to ODOT that we choose to bear to make sure these folks have this opportunity? Is this no different than some other program that we already offer? What I'm thinking of course, is as we all grow older, people's vision tends to start to fail. Are older people going to qualify for this program? And is that who makes up part of the 31 you're now dealing with?
Some of them have been senior citizens. The majority that I have personally trained have tended to be middle-aged or younger. The cost of the program is the same rate that we would charge anyone for driver training. And it's in most cases, it's paid personally. In one case that I'm aware of, the Commission for the Blind actually paid for the training. So the DMV may have further information about the ages of those involved.
Chair Benz, actually, I don't have further information about that. It has to do with visual acuity, maximums and minimums, and peripheral vision and that kind of thing. That's how you determine whether a person qualifies for this or not. And in terms of expense, folks have to pay to take a drive test just like anybody else would, and it's fairly minimal cost.
The measure of the success of the program seems to be the annualized crash rate, but I'm just wondering, is that a normal way of measuring whether or not this particular pilot program has been successful? I'm just curious how you, as when it was a pilot program, came back and said, yes, it's working, because most people hadn't had a crash by now, or because I'm just curious how you measure the good or the bad of a program of this nature.
Chair Benz, I wouldn't say that the department is taking a position on whether the pilot has been successful or not. The only real statistics we had to provide that we believe would inform the committee and the body was the crash rate. That's what we have.
The last question that I have is that when you're busy training people, I'm trying to figure out exactly how you measure their ability to drive. Do you tell some of them you can never drive over 20 miles an hour, or or is there a standard set of requirements they must meet in order to be able to drive up to the 45 mile an hour number?
At the completion of the course, I sign a paper that I turn into the DMV stating that based on my observation, this person is able to drive safely. And so in the course, I'm taking them in every type of driving environment, including freeway. And so knowing that they will be licensed and legally be able to drive on the freeway, I want to make sure that I have observed their driving on the freeway as well as other driving environments.
So at the end of that exercise, you make a call as to whether or not you think they're safe to drive, just like you would with anybody else, I suppose.
No, the standard is much higher for the bioptics. Anyone else we train, the DMV does not ask us whether or not they're safe to drive or not. So the standard is very high for the bioptic driver.
And when you say that, they're wearing whatever they need to wear to correct their vision, and you then make your decision based upon their ability to see utilizing those devices.
All right. And my decision then clears the way for them to go to the DMV and take a behind-the-wheel test. So that's the final screening process. The bioptic lens itself is something that's attached to the carrier lens of the individual, which magnifies their field of vision to sometimes up to 20/20. However, while they are looking through the lens, it narrows their field of vision, so they're not able to look through it at all times. So it's dipping down, looking through the lens, and it's sort of like we use a rearview mirror. We're not constantly looking in the rearview mirror, but we use it to gather information as we need it.
Thank you, Representative Wagner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question would be, how much does it narrow their field of vision? Because the place where I get concerned is you have a child on a bicycle coming this direction, and when you start narrowing and you can just see here, all of a sudden he's right there and you don't have a lot of time to react. So is it just to like this point here, or would it be like this here? Is there any way to really describe that? Or?
Sure. It depends on the degree to which the magnification takes place. So there tends to be a trade-off. The clearer the image, the narrower the field of vision. And so it's sort of like checking the rearview mirror. You don't stare at the rearview mirror because it takes your eyes off the road, but you glance at it. The same thing applies when looking through a bioptic lens. A person glances through it just momentarily to gather information and then look back up. So they're not looking through it for any extended period of time.
The question is, of course, whether the department supports the bill, and from reading the report, it appears that it does. Is that a correct thought?
Chair Benz, the department is neutral on the bill.
Then I guess I have to ask the question, is our road less safe as a result of passing the bill? Are our roads less safe?
From what the DMV has indicated, the BOPTIC drivers are safer drivers than the average driver. I mean, at least the driving records would indicate that. And so I would concur that, and in fact, those who have the nighttime ability have not been in any collisions. And so the statistics would indicate that by lifting the restriction that our roads would remain safe as they are, that it would not increase the danger on the road.
And Chair Benz, if I might add, nothing in the statistics that the department has seen indicates a lack of safety, and in speaking with the individual who manages this program as well as any others, there was no concern expressed about the bill.
Thank you. Further questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I have a comment.
Yes, sir.
I will say that my recollection of the passage of the bill that Senator Atkinson referred to is a little bit different than what his was. And I try very hard not to contradict the good senators unless they share my last name. So I actually did not vote for that bill, even when it was reconsidered. But I know I can be very stubborn and get set in my ways about certain things, as I'm sure that would surprise a lot of people here. But even I have to admit that, you know, I just don't see any reason not to do this bill at this point in time and would probably be voting yes.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much. I think that's all we have signed up for that, for this bill. And colleagues, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 273, and I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill
973, isn't it?
Did I say 973? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 973 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 259A. Zach.
Senate Bill 259A bears provisions in motor carrier transportation contracts that indemnify parties to contract against liability for any, excuse me, for acts of other party to be void.
Mr. Russell.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. Senate Bill 259A is a relatively simple bill. Basically, what it does is it prevents any party from inserting indemnification clauses in transportation agreements. These clauses have been increasing in frequency with the economy, and when there's a disparity between the market power between the big and the little, we see them fairly often. Sort of an example of where we think that they are unfair is we had a trucking company that was contracted with a customer to transport their goods. The truck backed up to the dock. The customer's forklift driver was loading the truck, and the truck driver was supervising to make sure that he was loading it safely. And the forklift driver lost control of the forklift. The forklift hit the truck driver. And because of the indemnification clause in the contract, the trucking company became liable for the injuries to their driver. Without the indemnification provision in the contract, it would have been up to a court to determine who had liability and for how much. Currently, there are 28 states that have passed similar legislation, and 12 states have the legislation pending. The most recent states that have passed it are Utah, Arizona, and Maine, although it doesn't show on the map that's attached that they have passed it that hasn't been signed into law by their governor yet. Washington passed it last year at their short session, and California has had a similar provision in place for many years. The bill passed out of the Senate Transportation and Economic Development Committee with a unanimous vote. It also passed unanimously on the floor of the Senate, and I would urge your support and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Russell? Yes, Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've visited about this already, and I always have a little bit of concern where freedom of contract is being interrupted by a statute in any way. And we write indemnification clauses. I understand that usually big companies can shove down the throat of smaller people provisions, sign it or don't sign it type thing. My question is in all these other states that have passed the anti-indemnity provisions, are they the exact same statute that is here? And if not, right. What's the difference?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lindsay, they vary to a degree. There is some uniform language that's been provided to all the states by the American Trucking Associations. But the various states obviously have different existing laws in place today. And in some instances, there have been court cases that have rendered decisions that would have modified these particular provisions. And Oregon is a good example of that. There is a similar provision in existing law, and it's been there for many years, governing contracts between contractors. And that one went actually to the Oregon Supreme Court, and there was a decision rendered, and based on that decision, this bill was drafted to make it consistent with that Supreme Court decision.
Thanks. Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to, I don't think we have anybody else signed up for that. Mm-mm. Anyone else want to be heard on Senate Bill 259A? No, then I'll close the public hearing, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 147.
Mr. Chair, we don't have any amendments, correct?
No amendments.
I move Senate Bill 147 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Motion to read is move Senate Bill 147 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Yeah, I did look in further. Appreciate the chair's taking a pause, and I'm prepared to vote yes on the bill. And thanks a lot.
Further discussion?
As long as we're clear on what the vessel is, I think it'll work out just fine.
Tugboat.
I'm good. Okay, the motion has been made to move SB 147 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion passes. But before gavel out of this, who would like to carry the bill? Mm-hmm. Have a volunteer?
Go ahead,
no one seems
Sheehan.
To
the
want
vessel.
To
the vessel. He's built like a tugboat.
Do we
what that means? Short, stout, and strong?
Relentless.
Remember Sheehan.
Reverend Sheehan will carry the motion passes. Representative Sheehan, thank you very much. Then I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 973. Is there a discussion? Actually, is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 973 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Reed has moved Senate Bill 973 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Now is there discussion? Seeing none, I understand that, is there objection? Seeing none, before I gavel out this and close this, Representative Widener, you've agreed to carry.
I will carry this for our senior members.
Thank you very much. That the motion passes. Thank you, Representative Widener. And I'm now going to open a work session on Senate Bill 259A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 259A to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Could you read us move Senate Bill 259A to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection?
I don't have a problem with this bill. I think it's great. And going forward, if it's going to be our consistent habit to have first hearing on the bill the same day that we move the bill, that's a relevant decision. I'd like to have the chance to talk about that further going forward, but I'm prepared to support this bill.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the motion carries. I need a carrier. Any volunteers?
I'll clear it.
Representative Widener, you've already volunteered for one. Representative Widener, thank you very much. And of course, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 259A. And I think, Zach, is there anything else left that we need to do?
Nope, we're done.
That, the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development is adjourned.
Sort of